so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's been a minute, but we are back with another toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you? I ask that question not as a pleasantry. I genuinely want to know how are you these days?
Yeah, you know, I'm okay. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out what I can do with myself so that, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but a little bit I'm trying to figure out, just in case something like this happens again afterwards, I want to feel like I did what I could. And I didn't feel like that this time.
I agree 100%.
And so I'm trying to figure out. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out what I can, if you will. and I haven't figured it out yet. I'm working on some things. You know, because I've managed to get to age 35 without any real life skills besides talking into a microphone, there are limited ways for me to participate in positive developments regarding our nation's political and social split. But I would like to somehow get involved, and I'm working on it.
I have a list.
And other than that, life goes on, I guess.
It's funny because I watched John Oliver on Monday, and I had some things I wanted to say on the podcast, and I feel like he stepped on a lot of them. But I swear these are my own original thoughts. That it really does come at you in waves, where at some point I'm, you know, I'll be really sad and discouraged about the results and what they say about us as a people and where we're going, and I'll get really down. And then, you know, I'll have some days where it's like, well, the sun's still coming up, and we have a system that's been in place for a couple hundred years now, and it's really hard for one person or even one branch of government to bring it down. And then I'll see the news and I'll hit right back into, oh my God, what have we done?
Yeah.
None of this is normal. So, that part of it is a pain. And I, like you, have felt like, okay, you know, sitting around and reading the news and making jokes on Twitter and ha ha ha, didn't do a lot. And we've now wound up with this situation where, and I think this goes both ways across both halves of the country, where we can sit here and go, how do these people not care about this? How do they not care about all these things that that I see? And, you know, I think the other side, the message is roughly the same, but it's a lot of why do these people not care about us? You know, why do they not listen to us?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to be a person who is in action doing actual things. And if there's anything I can do to bridge that divide, then great. And if not, then, I'm going to live with the results of that. All of that is to say a lot of really serious stuff. But for me, what's helped is kind of trying to come up with, a little bit of a to-do list for the next 4 years. And what I've come up with, again, apologies for being non-toy. We'll get to movies and TV and sports.
Well,
and
but before, just on that subject, quickly, we didn't do a podcast last week because we didn't really know how to have a conversation about the toy department the day after the thing. So I think this is relevant. I mean, part of why we love entertainment and the toy department is to take us away from this stuff, but also it's affected by this stuff, and I don't think anyone's going to see this election result as a banner day for creativity and the arts.
I mean, look, when I say this, I'm not trying to analogize the two events because they're very different things. But I haven't felt like this as a person who talks in a microphone since 9/11. Just in the I don't know how to be kind of way.
Right.
In the what is the proper tone to take. Kind of way. So, so here's my list of things. Since it sounds like you're sort of working on, hey, what can I do? This is another thing. I think John Oliver stepped on a good bit of this. But the first thing is, and I swear this is the only like hippy dippy sounding thing on this whole list is I want to do something kind every day. I want to put more kindness back in the world. That's a real basic, easy one.
I've had a lot of conversations about that.
Yeah, I feel like the world's going to need it. Second thing I have, and this is something I've already done, is subscribe to the New York Times and Washington Post and pay for it because I want to support original investigative journalism, and I thought those two did the best job. I already have a subscription to my local paper. I would recommend supporting your local paper as well because original reporting needs to be done. Television news is not going to do it. I think we've pretty much seen what television news is capable of.
Right.
So, news. So I want to support print media because print media is going to die if we don't. So that's an important thing for me. I am going to donate probably time rather than money to at least one organization that supports people who I feel like are disenfranchised.
I did donate a little bit of money because that's what I have. But I may still donate some time, but I wanted – it made me feel better, quite frankly. Someone had the brilliant idea on the internet. You can – make donations to Planned Parenthood in honor of a third party, and that third party can receive a notification of a donation in their honor. And so I donated $100 to Planned Parenthood in honor of Mike Pence and sent him a notification at the governor's mansion in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that was a thing. I think a lot of people are doing that, and it's funny.
Agreed, and it felt good.
Yeah. I get that.
It felt good on multiple levels. but yeah, anyway, go on, please.
So, and then I am going to volunteer with a political candidate who I think could potentially make a difference. I'm fortunate enough that my actual local congressman is up for DNC chair. So I feel like trying to get involved in that effort some ways.
Yeah.
Something that I'm looking forward to doing.
All my local representatives are already like entrenched left, like staunch left people. Like there's that, like, I don't know what that Barbara Boxer's already deep in this thing. I don't think Pelosi's going to be able to avoid, some getting into the muck over stuff.
Well, but, the reality is if you are concerned about the direction that we're headed in, the lack of opposition, having a plan to win back governorships, state legislatures, available House of Representative and Senate seats. It's going to be a tough battle in the Senate. Just numbers wise, the Democrats will be defending a lot of seats in 2018. It's not very likely that they would regain control of that body then, but you never know. But that 2018 election is going to be very important in terms of getting people to turn out. So that's a real thing that you can do.
Yeah.
All right. So that's about as serious as I want to get.
Agreed.
Talking about the, you know, how to be. I think maybe the most prominent sort of, hey, we need to entertain people and deal with a country, half of whom is pretty stoked and half of whom is in despair. And how do we go about doing that? I mean, I think the most prominent example was Saturday Night Live. Over the weekend. It's probably, you know, maybe the most I don't know if important is the right word, because you could certainly argue the episode that they let Donald Trump host turned out to be pretty important. But certainly the most kind of, I think, watched, where people are like, what are they going to do? You know what I mean? The most scrutinized maybe is the better word, because I don't know about the ratings. How do you think they handled – how do you – we'll get to Chappelle in a second, because I know we both have thoughts of that. But what did you think of the opening sketch? Because that was a little bit controversial, the cold open with Kate McKinnon.
It was controversial?
Yeah. Some people thought it was – not controversial in like I'm offended, but some people thought it was cheesy, I think. Whether people liked it or not, I think has been an open question.
Look, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion because of the way almost 50% of the country reacted to these election results. There's been a lot of talk about whether – like – what's appropriate and what's being too sensitive or like, you know, I've seen a lot of, give me a break with all the crying and sympathy and God, students can't take a test the day after the election. They're too upset. Come on, grow up. What's the harm in letting people come to grips with a thing that a huge percentage of the population thinks is horrifying?
Majority, I might
add. What's the harm?
The actual majority.
Well, the majority certainly voted against it, but the regardless, even if we're just talking about people that were deeply upset by it, it's a huge number of people that were deeply upset by this. What's the harm in a little bit of healing? I don't understand that. Why is it so offensive to people that other people might be more sensitive than they are? Sensitivity is actually, you know, a positive trait in most scenarios.
I wish that there was as much outrage about the lack of empathy in our society as there is about the lack of toughness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like,
I agree.
So what are they supposed – I don't understand. I don't know why you would bristle at that. I thought it was beautiful. And I know that Saturday Night Live ostensibly is selling to the people that elected Trump as well. But God forbid someone should try to send a message of hope and unity right after a horrible – message of divisiveness and cluelessness was sent by the whole country. God forbid someone should try to be hopeful. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know that I found it to be beautiful, but I found it to be
the singing wasn't. I wouldn't hire Kate McKinnon to perform that for like. At the Kennedy Center honors or anything.
Yeah, she did fine. I found it to be appropriate is what I think.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the sense of appropriate for the moment, but also really appropriate to the character. The air quotes Hillary Clinton, who may have appeared in as many sketches as any character that they've had on this show over the last 7-8 years, I would say, right? She's made a lot of appearances.
A lot, yes.
And, you know, this will probably be the final one, or definitely the last one for a while. So,
you'd imagine they're going to give it a rest for a bit.
Yeah. So, it seemed like a nice coda to go out that way. Now, it also helps for me.
Great, great use of coda.
Yeah.
Go on.
That they followed that immediately with a Dave Chappelle monologue that was just straight fire.
I mean, it just reminded you why we need Dave Chappelle in the world and working.
And, you know, why comedians, you know, because, look, I do think there's a school of thought out there that I don't necessarily disagree with, that maybe we overdosed on comedians and yucking it up a little bit and, you know, destroying the other guy, eviscerating the other guy with our internet passion, and that people just sort of tune that out. But it does show
you think that's if you're. Sorry, but anyone who wants to blame that on comedians is part of the problem.
Well, look, there's a difference between saying, hey, this didn't help, and blaming comedians for the election. You know what I mean? Like, there's a level of nuance, I think.
Well, not even for the collection, or not even for the election, but for the. For the culture of one-upsmanship and shot-taking, that's all human nature. That's not comedians.
Sure. Not the fault of comedians. I'm saying that maybe that we, you know, that some of that has been overvalued in the culture, and maybe its impact on the conversation is somewhat outsized.
Maybe. I don't know if I agree with that.
There are a higher percentage of Americans getting their news from The Daily Show than is maybe appropriate. How about that? Would you agree with that?
But definitely agree with that, but not just The Daily Show. The Daily Show and Fox News to me are very similar. So, I'm not going to blame it on comedians. It's entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
People are more interested in entertainment than they are in news. And that is not the fault of the entertainers.
Yeah.
That's capitalism plus human nature equals that.
Yeah, no, there's a larger point there, yeah, that I think is – look, that's fair. There's a larger point about people's
I don't mean to nitpick the comedian's point, but I think Chappelle was a perfect example, and I think it's much more true in general that yes. We need comedians.
Which was the side boulevard that I was getting on.
I'm sorry. I got up in arms there. I don't insult comedians. Don't you minimalize comedians.
That's a perfect example of how that kind of voice can be important. It can be healing for people on both sides. Because, there was just a lot of truth in there. And, in this sort of post-fact world that all of a sudden we find ourselves living in, like some real, honest, relatable truth. It was nice. And frankly, some even truths that I disagree with fundamentally, it's a little easier to take them in a comedy routine, isn't it? Than
like what?
There's definitely a school of comic who is, you know, the why can't I joke about this comic, you know, or why, you know. I don't like that people are too politically correct and I can't laugh anymore that I feel like we can't laugh anymore. And I don't necessarily agree with that sentiment, but I appreciate the diversity of the viewpoint. And it's a little bit easier to take some of those things for me in a joke than it is coming out of Steve Bannon's mouth.
Well, that guy, I mean, yeah, I don't feel like Chappelle really did that.
No, he didn't.
Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I'm saying. No, just saying that. I'm just saying that. If you were a person,
yeah, no, that's a
that
thing.
That felt differently than Chappelle did about the issue. I think you could still enjoy the routine. Right. Is what I was saying.
Oh yeah, I would hope so. And most of the stuff he was saying was not about. He was not taking a huge political stance. Although I think it's pretty clear where he stands politically. He was mostly talking about human beings and how they reacted and how they felt, you know? And I think he did a good job of talking about all the human beings he knows best, which is to say the guilty white liberals and black people.
Yeah.
You know, like I think he did a really good job of calling out sort of what happened here. And then talking about well, yeah, that's what happened, and it's maybe it wasn't all that surprising in some ways, but also here's like the real stuff that's happening, and here's the real effects this has,
yeah,
and here's why it is upsetting. Yeah, and I mean he's just excellent.
The last two minutes were great. Really great.
Say again?
The last 2 minutes I thought of the monologue were really great.
Yeah.
And wrapped it up in a way that was great, saying, you know, I'm gonna give this guy a chance, but he needs to do the same of us. So yeah.
And you know, Donald Trump's probably never gonna see that. But
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, I think.
Hopefully you're right.
I would. First hopefully of all, we know he's an avid TV watcher, and we certainly know that he has been commenting on particular things that happened on the show during the election. I would bet money that he was watching that episode.
Don't you feel like someone just shows him the parts where someone's playing
no.
him, though?
I don't think
he watched Dave Chappelle talk.
I've seen reports that he watches a lot of television, just watches a lot of television, even during the campaign.
All right, well then hopefully he saw that, and hopefully he thinks about that part at the end, because it's a simple ask, but so far not so good.
Yeah, I doubt it. I think he mostly just views things in terms of, does this person like me, or are they insulting me? I thought the monologue was great. I also really liked the skit with him and Chris Rock.
Yes.
Although I thought it was marred a little bit by poor cue card execution on their part.
Well,
but the point in the sketch was really great, I thought.
Dave Chappelle, over the course of the night, Dave Chappelle probably blew 5 to 10 punchlines by misreading cue cards. Which just tells you, like, he's not a guy that is used to reading cue cards, and why would he be? But other than that, I thought the whole show was pretty good.
Yeah, me too. Rock blew a few too. It was funny to me a little bit watching these comedy legends like step on lines and stuff.
Well, it's a tough job, you realize. And then I will say, just on a personal note, I really thought the inside SNL sketch where they did like a post, like they had a bad sketch and then they did like a frustrated post sketch press conference, like. It wasn't maybe fully executed to its highest potential, but the idea was tremendous, and some of the lines people dropped were excellent, just as someone who watches a bunch of dumb post-game press conferences.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit swing and a miss on that one. Like I liked the ambition of the idea. I didn't think they pulled it off.
But also that in itself was a little ironic given the subject matter.
Did you like the Walking Dead sketch with Chappelle's old characters?
I laughed and enjoyed it. It was like being handed a blankie for 5 minutes.
Where are you at on Walking Dead in general? Because there are two shows for me right now that are in the DVR pileup. Am I going to continue stage for me? And they are Walking Dead and Westworld.
Walking Dead. That me too. Walking Dead has I'm two behind. Westworld. I'm only one behind.
Yeah, I'm like 3 and 4 behind on those. I only watched the first Walking Dead. It's not good.
I watched the second one, and it was better than I enjoyed it more than the first one. It's a totally different. Its focus is completely different. But I haven't watched the third one, so I haven't gone back to the Negan situation yet. Empire is the third one for me that's piling up on the DVR, and I have trouble seeing a way through the trees to getting to watch any of these shows in the particularly near future.
I'm just not sure what Walking Dead has left for me, you know?
I know what it has left for me. I'm just not sure it's anything I haven't seen.
Yeah, like another big bad who's super intimidating, and some more beloved character deaths. You know what I mean? Or like, that's not these are supposed to be the highs, and those are I've been there on that. You know,
yeah. To open the season the way they did was almost to me waving a big flag that says we're getting back on the same old merry-go-round.
Yep. We're going to let Jeffrey Dean Morgan choose some scenery. We're going to kill off some people.
He's delightful.
Yeah.
In the one episode I watched him in, he's great. And at some point, maybe I'll marathon a few Walking Deads because I feel like watching some zombies get murked. But it's certainly not appointment TV for me anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I feel a little bit out of step with America on that because I think people are still watching in crazy numbers.
Yeah, but it's not being talked about the way it was anymore.
Apparently, people are watching Westworld in pretty good numbers, too, because that also has been renewed.
Did get renewed.
Yeah, for season 10.
Yeah.
Although 2018, although I don't know exactly what that means. So not next year. Going to be a little bit of a layoff.
Obviously, it just takes forever to make the damn thing. I don't know. My trust rope is running shorter and shorter on Westworld. You know, I think we talked about how we had trust issues when it started because of who made it and the way it began, and those have only gotten worse for me.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm three episodes behind, so clearly my trust rope is non-existent at this point.
Yeah.
I've been told by people who are into it that it picked up somewhere along the line, but I've like there's so much robot angst I have to swim through to get there that I'm not sure I'm going to make it. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. At some point, I may find myself
shows,
right. We got a holiday coming up. I may find myself with an excess of free time. So,
some of these shows are like winter catch-up shows, especially for you because you have winter. You know,
yeah.
Some of these shows are like on a Wednesday night when you'd like to be going out and doing something, but it's -3 degrees with the wind chill. You're going to watch 3 episodes of Westworld.
Yeah. All right. So Westworld got picked up. There's another show that got picked up as well that we want to talk about. But should we talk about that one, or should we talk about the one that HBO canceled first?
Ooh, since we're doing fiction, let's do Insecure first.
All right, so Insecure picked up for a second season. This is a show that I'm fully caught up on. And you are in love with, yeah?
I love this show. I love, 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 love this show. I think it is the most authentic 30-minute television show I've ever seen.
Wow. All
that right. I might be exaggerating just because nothing's popping to mind.
I was going to say, go on.
But here's the thing is like, the conversations that happen on this show, the content and the tone and tenor of them is just like, I know these people. I know people who have these conversations. Some of these conversations I have. And even the ones that I definitely don't have, which is mostly just because quite frankly, they're black conversations. They feel so real in a way. And, you know, we talked about the authenticity of like Atlanta, but that's sort of like fantastical or magical authenticity, you know? And I think that is something, while Atlanta did a really excellent job of it, that is something that we get in all of our best, like the majority of peak TV gives us that feeling of authenticity in a fictional way, in a fantastical or magical way. But Insecure is just like, it just feels like my friend. It just feels like someone I'm talking to about life and about their life. And Issa Rae is so, like, at turns troubled and hopeful and then confused and then overwhelmed and then perfectly in control. It just feels like such a real human being who's dealing with the day-to-day, what's involved. A lot of the stuff we're talking about over the last couple weeks with a political result people are confused by is, you know, what's the way to get through the day and also get through life? how do I get to 6 p.m. while feeling okay about how I'm getting to tomorrow and to next year and to 20 years down the road? And that, to me, is what this show feels like it's about, is I'm trying to be a human being in the world that I can, that, and respect myself, and I'm also trying to make it to work tomorrow. And I just think it's so well executed and written, and also just like delightful in so many ways. I can't get enough of it, and everyone on it is beautiful.
All right. You know what I feel like now? Here's maybe a real conversational moment. Like, you know when you have a buddy, and like they've met someone and they're like really crushing on them and they're like super excited and they're like, oh man, this girl, she's the most beautiful, and I've, well, you know, like that. And uh-huh. Then you meet them and you're like, yeah, she seems cool. Like, that's, yeah, I feel like that's, no, kind of how that. I feel
by
right
way,
now
that's,
like,
that's literally happening in my personal life too right now, so I have no idea if those two things are related.
Yeah, like I don't, you know, it's not that I necessarily disagree or that I think it's a bad show. Like, I'm enjoying it, and I do think that it is real. That's probably part of why, and I do like that, you know, the show is centered around a character who has some inherent and obvious flaws.
Yeah.
And that there are real conversation topics, and you know, people are not afraid to sort of laugh at themselves, and it speaks to some everyday truths. I don't know that it
you
does that more than, say, quickly. Girls, though. You know what I mean? It's just that maybe because,
well, I think
because you're talking about young black people, it's a little bit cooler to talk about their truths than the problems of privileged white girls. But
that could be true. That could be true. I think the content of the conversations is more interesting and meaningful in Insecure than it is in Girls. A lot of the girls – not meaningful. A lot of the girls' stuff is more just about – how people interact with each other and less about how they interact with the world in any meaningful
way,
that, outside,
yeah,
of just like, man, they interact with the world in an irresponsible way. But also I just think to an even greater extent, and No Shade at Girls, which does a really good job with its writing and conversation as well, I think this show does to me stand above. And the way I was thinking about it was like, you and I have both loved 30-minute sitcoms like Friends and How I Met Your Mother. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, look, I loved Friends. It was a simpler time. I think,
yes,
maybe.
No, I know.
But
I,
yes, when it was on, I loved that show. You know, I'm,
yeah,
not one that watches the reruns incessantly, like, you know what I mean? Like,
no,
kids
nor am I. But, okay. but I loved that show.
Yeah.
And I had my moments with How I Met Your Mother as well. And what those shows are doing is trying to, I mean, almost exclusively having conversations between young adult characters in allegedly real life situations, and every one of them is resplendent with trite nonsense and laugh tracks. And they did a good enough job with those conversations to entertain us for 9 years with each show, basically. Insecure,
well,
to me,
maybe more like 5 or 6 with How I Met Your Mother.
Okay, right. Entertain us for 5 years, beyond for 9 years. That's a good point.
Okay.
But Insecure, those conversations, instead of feeling like they're trite and filled with silly nonsense and attempts at bad quips, manage to feel like real conversations that I and people I know are having, and yet also be every bit as funny as the best written bits. And without doing things that don't happen in real conversation. Because look, if you're a smart person with smart, funny friends, you have funny conversations every day. And people you know say funny, smart things. But to write them in a way that feels real and sounds like a real conversation I might actually have, I think the world has proven that is an incredibly difficult thing to do, and they have done just a great job with it, I think.
I get off the train a little bit at every bit is funny. I don't like the show is funny, okay, but I don't find it to be that funny.
Okay.
And I would suggest to you that, you know, Atlanta is a funnier show. I would say Better Things is a funnier show, just among shows that are on now. Louis can be a funnier show, although Louis isn't always funny.
I do think that Atlanta is funnier, but Atlanta is playing with a larger palette.
Yeah, and look, but all of those shows that I mentioned do sort of employ some of that magical realism, if you will. I guess magical realism is a real term that may not be appropriate. But
also, those are all great shows.
Yeah, they're great shows. They're great shows.
Yeah.
And look, I think what all of those shows are originally voiced from a unique perspective, an individual perspective. Or, and I'm glad that there's more of that on television now.
Or at least from a perspective the likes of which we have not seen much from in the past. And I think it just tells you, look, I think the quality and originality of Atlanta and to a slightly lesser extent, but still so Insecure. I'm not sure there's anything more noteworthy than the referendum that, in these particular cases, black voices, but I think in general, minority voices of all kinds have been so underrepresented that not only are there an incredible number of talented people that probably deserve more work than they've had, but also just stories to tell and perspectives to speak from that will entertain us that are new things on mass media. And it's great. It's great to have. I mean, how much do people complain in our current media world about seeing the same recycled stuff over and over again? This is how you get out of that.
Yep.
Issa Rae, Donald Glover. That's how you get rid of the same tired material being played out in every different genre across every different platform, is new voices, and they're excellent.
Well, it's one of the things about FX that I think is doing some of the best work in general on TV.
They did the same thing with Fargo, essentially.
Yeah,
it's not a minority voice in the same way, but it's a totally different way of telling a story from an auteur that is given some free rein.
Yeah, and if you look across the board, they have a very high percentage of shows that are being helmed by first-time showrunners. And I think that comes, I don't know if it's a byproduct of, I just say it's a correlation, I think, of valuing, that sort of unique voice and really wanting to let people create.
Yeah. And of letting people create, of giving people the space to execute their vision and talent.
Yay for Insecure.
Woo!
I'm not as head over heels in love.
HBO, not FX, but
yes, I'm not as head over heels in love as Kolsky is, but I do enjoy it, and I would recommend it to people, definitely. It's one of the easier watches of the week for me, for sure.
Yes, it's an easy watch, but it's still there's still something to it.
Yeah.
I think for what people have learned in about a year of this podcast about my personality, it should not be a surprise that an easy watch, which also has some heft to it in its own way, is right up my alley.
And for me, I meant easy watch by when I'm scrolling through the DVR and
you're
I get to it.
Do it.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm up for this,
As opposed to Walking Dead or Westworld, which you like highlight for a second and then you're like, nah.
Well, and look, that's one of the things, not to get back into our general mood. But I have found myself gravitating a little bit more towards lighter, comforting things. It was easier for me to watch Shameless or a Masters of Sex this week than maybe in a couple weeks past, and I don't think that's necessarily reflective of how I feel, but the quality of those shows right now was just like, all right, I can handle this at this particular moment,
because I don't really want to start watching either of those.
Yeah, so. No, and that's just where I'm at. Although Shameless is enjoyable.
I queued up Bar Rescue real easy.
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of those piled up. Maybe I need to get into those or some like lip sync battles or something like that.
Oh my God, Bar Rescue, I believe it was episode 11 of this season, which featured a bar at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, is one of my favorite episodes of all time. If we can briefly, that is the detour. But
have we ever talked about Bar Rescue on this show?
I think we've brought it up. I don't know that we've had an in-depth conversation. All I can say is it is at once complete trash and my favorite show on television.
Yeah, like, I can't even tell you what really makes it delightful. Like,
I can try.
It's trashy and it's so clearly staged. You know what I mean? Like reality television.
Yeah, so much of it is very, very produced. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's something about it that is, it's insanely watchable. And you know, Spike airs on Spike. They are very generous about throwing it out there in marathon sized chunks. So it's super easy to get sucked into a Bar Rescue marathon.
It's one of the most marathonable shows ever because of the and a huge part of it, just to, without getting too deep into it, is like the main character, John Taffer, who is the Gordon Ramsay of bars, you know, is sort of in this scenario, is an incredible character.
Yeah.
I mean, an incredible character.
A bit of a douche, but insanely watchable.
Well, yeah.
Insanely watchable.
A bit of but also a douche in like this hilarious... he's a douche with a code.
Yeah. Yes, he is. He's a man with a code.
Yeah.
He, I think, actually, like, really cares about what he's doing. I mean, lays it on a bit thick, but he really cares about what he's doing. And
he lays it on incredibly thick, but that's part of the charm. And it's somehow it's more sincere and less, like, it's less performative from his to me anyway than a Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, I agree. But sensitive John Taffer is endlessly hilarious.
Oh my
like
God!
Really,
oh my God!
He's really trying to
John
get into
Taffer
your problems.
John changes lives every week. He breaks people down so he can build them up.
And you know what? It's also like I like going to bars. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So it's like it's kind of fun to spend time in these bars, many of which are kind
and
of like delightfully
like,
terrible.
Right, and if you enjoy something like Kitchen Nightmares, like the problems at bars are infinitely more hilarious than the problems in kitchens.
Agreed.
As a general rule. Yeah.
So that's reality TV I recommend. They are just lying in wait for you for the end of football season, you know, when like all of a sudden
absolutely.
Your Sundays are kind of free, like they'll be dropping marathons on you. So I would just say
wait till February, mid-February Sunday, you're going to have like 15 episodes of Bar Rescue consecutively on Spike TV and it's going to be a beautiful day.
And you might watch 12. Like settle
yeah,
in.
Exactly.
All right. So, you know, I guess real briefly, we should touch on Any Given Wednesday, the Bill Simmons HBO show, which met its maker. We'd actually planned to discuss the show and how, you know, what was working, what wasn't, or how it might go forward. And then it's not going anywhere at all.
Going forward.
You know, the other thing, I guess, that was sort of related was that Chris Collinsworth and Bill Simmons got into Twitter beef, in which Simmons kind of ripped Collins's commentary on the Seattle Seahawks offensive line. Collins brushed back with the why don't you break it down for me on that hit show of yours? and everybody went like little schoolgirls like
I think that got exactly the reaction it deserved, and I think it got also the quick resolution it deserved because they're two adult men who don't need to bicker in public.
I think Collinsworth has been on Simmons's podcast before. He came on last night. And they kind of squashed it a little bit. But I, you know, yes.
But it was easy to squash. Predictably easy to squash, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it serves anybody for either one of those guys to take the approach that, like, say, Stephen A. Smith would. You know,
right,
like that.
Earth.
How dare you come after me? You know, and like,
it's nonsense.
That part wouldn't have been fun.
Because that's idiotic behavior.
Yeah.
What they did was like normal, you know, behavior between two guys that talk a little too much, right?
A little bit, yeah.
And it's probably not worth getting into at this point, but like for me, perfectly legitimate criticism of Collinsworth by Bill Simmons, not inappropriate, but slightly over the top response from Collinsworth that was also delightful and hilarious as a spectator. And then it was over, and that's I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do feel like, you know, the underlying point in that television is hard, particularly watching football plays at live speed, breaking them down in time to see a replay, and having to do this, you know, near 100 times over the course of 3 hours on the highest rated show on television, that's really hard. You're going to make some observations that aren't always – you're not going to nail it every time. You know what I mean? Like, you might say something that's a little trite. And I feel like Collinsworth's perspective of, hey, you do live TV. You know this is hard. Why are you coming – why are you picking every nit? You know what I mean? Like to me, that was a fair response to that. And I don't know if you listened to the podcast at all, but Collinsworth kind of talking about some of the criticism he gets on the street and how good it felt to just sort of unload on a Giants fan one day. Yeah. Like, yeah, I do hate your team, you know, even though he didn't really, but like just, you know, just that release of that felt good. I feel like this was a little bit of a Twitter version of that for him. You know, like, I'm going to smack you down because come on, man.
I think so, too. And he has every right to do that. And the things you just said that he kind of expressed on the podcast are totally true and valid. But also, you're handsomely paid to talk about sports on the air. And he also, to Collinsworth's credit, he said this as well. You are handsomely compensated to sit in arguably the best seat in the house and talk about fun times every Sunday. And while you're correct that watching 100 football plays and analyzing them on the fly is very difficult, another part of your job, which might end up being the most difficult part of your job, is taking crap every single time you say something that's not quite right. It's just part of it. And so I while I understand the sentiment that he expressed and that you are expressing on his behalf, and it's a legitimate way to feel, I'm not sure you're not going to get a lot of sympathy for it.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm not sure people are going to be critical of him.
But you know, and
no,
and
I know. I'm just saying I'm not sure it's fair for anyone to say it's not appropriate to criticize when he does say things that aren't right, and he did. And Simmons criticized him for saying something that was at best uninsightful, but more realistically, basically wrong.
It's not unfair to be critical, although I think Simmons did it snidely, and I think that's what led that's what opened the door for, you know, for the clapback.
And don't get me wrong, which was delightful. Clapback. It was a great clapback.
But you know, and we got into this a little bit yesterday. You know, like, you know, Collinsworth gets graded on a curve because everyone else sucks so bad, and I kind of don't look at it that way. I think Collinsworth and Michaels are by far the best team on TV. Plenty of that's Michaels,
respect to Collinsworth. I think Collinsworth is one of the best. Michaels is what makes that broadcast stand apart.
Okay, he's great.
Al Michaels is our greatest broadcast.
I don't want to get into a whole, you know, I don't want to get into any – I have no quarrel with Al Michaels, and I agree. He's fantastic. I think Simmons made an excellent point about how he's kind of the next Vin Scully, because I think he's going to do this another 15 more years, and we'll all get to appreciate how awesome he is.
The fact that he's in his 70s is uncanny.
But if you're just divorcing that – you know, and just saying, like, all right, color guys, who would you want?
No, I'm taking Collinsworth. The best. I'm not disputing it.
And, you know, for me, a lot of that is that I feel like what I'm looking for in a color guy is not get every play right. It's see the things I don't see. See the things the camera doesn't pick up, and don't take things off the table. I don't need you to sell me on the game, like, you know, at Gruden.
We don't.
And I think Collins does well on all those scores. You know,
we don't disagree about any of that. I just don't think that that gives him a pass for when he says stuff that's not right. I think part of your job as Chris Collinsworth is getting crapped on when you don't do your incredibly difficult job perfectly. That's just part. It comes with the territory. Just like when I stumble over the word Gilman Street in a traffic update, someone tweets at me, ha ha ha, you idiot. Like, that's, it's part of what you do.
Is the LOL Kolsky parody account still up and running, by the way?
I don't know. Someone created a parody account just to tweet at me in an apparent attempt to make me feel like a hypocrite about Trump voters.
I think it's so awesome that that someone would do that. And I really hope someone if anyone listening to this wants to create a parody account making fun of me on Twitter, please. Like, I'd be honored.
Yeah, he hasn't. It looks like maybe he'd. Yeah, he's still semi-active. He's only had like 10 tweets or something.
Well, hey, that's good. 10 tweets out. That's 10 more than I got. Will. I do want to ask you though. You were kind of pro Any Given Wednesday. Like, did you feel like the show was working?
No, okay. I did not feel like the show was working. I felt like there were parts of the show that utilized what I think is one of Bill Simmons' great talents, which is conversation. And as someone who believes that conversation and discussion is an art of its own, I thought some of the conversations he had. Did you watch the one with Al Michaels and Bob Costas?
I did, yeah.
I don't think anyone else can have that conversation with those two guys. I really don't.
I mean, look, I think a lot of that was what HBO was looking for. I think the show erred in, you know, starting to try to make that a TV show and doing the, you know, a lot of the stand-up pieces and the, you know, hey, we're going to do the thing that's kind of like the word with Stephen Colbert where we'll do a commentary and like
– a lot of those did not work.
Those were all just
they
flat.
Just did not work.
And eventually had to be flat. Jettisoned. But here's the other thing I would say is that –
Here's what I want to know. Why couldn't you have a 30-minute show every week that was Bill Simmons in conversation with interesting personalities?
Yeah.
That I would have watched.
I don't
understand why they didn't try to change the format after 9 episodes instead of canceling.
I think that would have been a better play. And I think the the informal conversation was good. But I would also say, you know, there were some punches pulled over the course of this. You have Chris Bosh on and you don't ask him about his health. You have Aaron Rodgers on at a time when all of America was talking about his brother on The Bachelor, and you don't even bring it up. And, you know, I think for those of us, you know, for people who like Simmons because he feels like an authentic voice of a fan, you know, not taking stabs in those questions, you know, on the big questions, on the questions that people like actually kind of – not the big questions, not the important questions, but questions that you know people are watching – are going to want to know. I mean, isn't that as an interviewer, right? Isn't that how you approach every interview? Like, I go into it going, okay, you know, if I'm talking to this band, what is it that people really want to know about this band? And I have to make sure that I have to get to those, you know.
Yeah, but
somehow.
As someone who has booked for radio and worked in radio, I'm guessing you probably assume the same I did, which is Aaron Rodgers stipulated that.
Yeah, but I don't think you know.
No, you can have a conversation about whether allowing him to stipulate that versus just saying, well, then we're not going to have you on. Maybe, you know, the right thing to do is say we're not going to have you on.
I think you would have been better served that way.
In both of the cases you mentioned, it was stipulated that we're not going to talk about
this. Well, the Bosch one, I know it was. The Rodgers thing, I don't know that it was. So, but you know, the other thing, and I think this is the other thing about the conversation that I think is important, is that, you know, HBO is as a business model, right? You know, this is a subscriber, you know, channel that's getting a lot of rights fees, you know, over the top, right? You have to elect to pay for HBO, and what they value as much as people watching is buzz. And
yes. You
have really maybe the two premier, the premier politics interview show and the premier political comedy show, both of whom are creating lots of buzzy moments. And other
You're
than the
Oliver
Affleck.
Oliver and Bill Maher?
Yeah, I'm saying Oliver and Bill Maher. And both of those shows are have record ratings as well. But the.
Yeah.
You know, the moments outside of the Ben Affleck thing from the first episode, there just wasn't anything that created any kind of social media conversation out of those conversations. Yeah. And I think that was, you know, a big factor, you know, in the demise
yeah.
of that show.
I think that side of it to me is the unfortunate part because, like, again, for me, I got a lot out of that interview with Costas and Michaels, two broadcasters that I have super strong feelings on in opposite directions. And in some ways those were confirmed and in some ways they were disrupted slightly, but I got to see a depth to both of those dudes that I think we rarely get. And I think that's valuable. And some would say, well, isn't it just a video podcast? And that may be true. But I think there's value in that video. And I think those are conversations that are interesting and that, again, I think Bill Simmons can have conversations largely by nature of just the way his career has gone and the relationships he's developed. I think he can create some conversations that I don't know anyone else could. And I do think there's value in that. And I would have liked to keep watching that, but it's hard to blame HBO when watching the show in some – it just felt like there were a lot of swing and misses on almost every episode.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I don't know, you know, when he's doing a podcast that you wouldn't just get those same conversations on that podcast. And frankly, because yeah. of the show, he was doing a lot less podcasting and and almost no writing. So, you know, I think at the end yeah. of the day, it's probably if you're a Bill Simmons fan,
way,
him not doing the show is probably a win. For you.
It probably is because as you kind of I think were referring to probably his best talent remains writing.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that anymore.
No.
I think his best talent is podcasting. I do. And
I like that too, but he's
arguably
an
film producing.
And unique writer,
like,
I guess is what I should have said.
Crafting these documentaries. Yeah, I think he's at the point you know, and I would if you're a Simmons fan at all, or if you're part of the Interruption fan at all, and you haven't heard this, I recommend going back in the archives and checking out the Simmons podcast with Tony Kornheiser from a couple of months ago. I think it's yeah. revealing. It's right before Tony's about to start his own podcast, which I
right.
would also recommend you listening to. But they, you know, there's a lot of conversation there about. When it's time to step away from writing, when you kind of lose that fire for it, even mm-hmm. even though you have the talent, when you know that you can't create at that level, and uh-huh. I think that Simmons may have reached that place, and I just think the evidence of it is just that little writing he's doing. And
maybe,
I don't.
He wrote a LeBron article recently that was really very good and reminded me how good he is.
Yeah.
When he's inspired.
But I think that was less and less over the last few years. I would also add, you know, in terms
yeah,
of his
well,
talents, developing and nurturing other writers, I think, has been a talent of his. Although, I don't love The Ringer. And, you know, I'm just going to say it. I don't love The Ringer.
Is it that you don't love The Ringer or that you just haven't found your way into The Ringer yet? Because I have to say, I think we're in a similar boat in as much as, like, I don't go to The Ringer every day. I don't read The Ringer like I did Grantland. But when I do read The Ringer, I'm usually very pleased and entertained in the way I was by Grantland. It just somehow it isn't presented in a format that has drawn me in.
Oh, in that case, it's definitely the former. I don't go to The Ringer much anymore because when I go to The Ringer, I don't read stories that I find to be compelling in the
really?
Way that I did regularly at Grantland.
The same,
couldn't stop
the
reading
same
Grantland.
Writers.
Yeah.
Shea Serrano, you know, Robert Mays on football. I think Kevin O'Connor's basketball stuff is good. I mean, no one's Zach Lowe, but I think Kevin O'Connor's good. I'm surprised you say that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the best writers did not make the transition over, whether it be Zach Lowe or Barnwell.
Yeah. Rembert.
Rembert, Greenwald. I mean, I guess Greenwald's, you know, with the Ringer.
He's not really writing anymore.
He's not really writing. Yeah. Yeah, Rembert is another one. There are more, you know. Obviously, Klosterman's not writing.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
But I do think there's a lot of really good writers there.
And Stephen Hyden, who obviously I really enjoy. And not that Ralph Arbill is bad. It's just not... Yeah, it hasn't packed the same punch for me from a writing standpoint.
Interesting.
As maybe the old site did. But, you know, whatever. That's probably a niche thing. You know, one of the things that is interesting to me, and this is a super self-serving point, I think, when talking about these cable shows, whether it's Any Given Wednesday or the battle between First Take and the awful Fox Skip Bayless monstrosity, is how few people actually watch these things.
You can tell by the commercials. It's a bunch of unemployed white men.
Yeah. Like the audience for either. Well, you know, a lot of black people like First Take. I'm not going to go with you on the white man thing. If you ever look at the social media mentions on for those shows.
All right. Let me rephrase.
It's a multicultural rainbow of dumb.
It's people who shop for extends.
Yeah, possibly.
It's 5 hour energy. It's a lot of 5 hour energy and extends commercials. Yeah.
The audience, for either one of our radio stations, is often larger than, the audience for one of these shows. I mean, the last Any Given Wednesday, I think drew 82,000 people, which is. There are many, many radio stations that are drawing more than that in a week. So, it's kind of crazy when you think about it on that scale.
I think we got to go to Black Mirror before we get out of here.
Oh, holy crap! We really do got to go to Black Mirror. So yeah, so all right. So I guess real briefly.
The good news is.
Yeah. Go ahead. For me. I've gotten ahead. I think I've now seen 5 of the 6 episodes, which is good because it's In these times, this is a sharp insight on our current world, it's really depressing. Black Mirror is a little tough to swallow right now. It's a little too real for me, so I'm glad I'm ahead. This particular episode, Shut Up and Dance. Should we get into the plot of it?
Yeah, we'll spoil it. I mean, I was going to say the good news is I think we can have a pretty short conversation because this to me is probably the least interesting episode of Black Mirror that we've had.
Oh.
I
don't think I found it that. I found it to be
really?
maybe the darkest. Maybe just the this makes
dark.
Me sad. But I didn't find
it's
it to be the least interesting at all.
Okay, I'm not saying it's uninteresting.
I didn't find
what
it to
I'm
be
saying
least
is,
interesting episode of this season. Actually,
really?
Yeah, that'll be one we'll talk about later.
Oh, well, I can't. And I hope it's not number 4. Anyway, this is number 3. The Shut Up and Dance, and basically, it's bad people getting forced to do messed up things because of they don't want their bad acts exposed. I mean, that's the simple. Because they rip away the sympathy for the characters at the end of the episode, I find it has the least left over to talk about. Does
interesting.
That make sense?
Talking
about people that are forced to do.
I would
of
say.
Things.
I would say isn't. I mean, isn't that exactly what happened in White Bear, which is an episode that you love?
Well, two things. First of all, the like setup and reveal to me was much more engaging and well executed. The concept of the way the woman is punished in White Bear is a fascinating thing that deserves its own conversation. You know, the humanity of that, the lack of humanity of that, the fact that our culture might actually support something like that. There's a whole conversation to be had. This is pretty standard blackmail in this one.
I guess.
Well,
I don't know if it's straightforward to you know, make two people fight to the death. And then, I think to me, it's examining your feelings about that and your sort of, you know, your natural sympathy for the to the character whose point of view you've sort of been watching the story from, and then in light of, you know, in light of the reveal, how you feel about that, I still think that's an interesting conversation.
Oh, I it's pretty simple for me because after the, you know, you find out that these are pedophiles.
Right.
And that's the point at which I say, cool, let's kill each other.
Right. Well, that's what I mean, is it's like, I don't
feel like there's anything for me to confront in myself over that, honestly.
Yeah, see, I don't. I'm not taking a pro pedophilia stance. Like I definitely think horrible. You know, like I'm fine with bad things happening. I don't know that I feel like, okay, fight to the death is maybe and I don't know that I'm okay with that. You know?
Yeah. I this may surprise you. I'm pretty comfortable with really deeply horrible things happening to bad people.
Yeah.
I kind of think we should be more aggressive about it as a culture.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is
let's not have a death penalty conversation because it's very complicated, but like, I'm all for killing a lot of people.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm just saying, like, it's pretty aggressively horrible what happens to these people. And I think whether you're comfortable with that is, I think there is an interesting conversation that you and I could have, and we probably shouldn't because we're running long.
Yeah.
But,
no, we definitely shouldn't do this podcast at all. But like, for me, it was like, oh, they're pedophiles. Well, then, all right, cool. Let them kill each other. And
by the way, they're not all pedophiles. You know what I mean? Like, there are some pedophiles, lots of not pedophiles in this thing, though. You know what I mean?
I understand, but that was sort of the big reveal.
So, and all of them are made to do kind of horrible things. Yeah, you know,
for a culture where people are you know, randomly blackmailed into fights to the death. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying a lot of Black Mirror episodes gave me very complicated feelings and concerns and thoughts, and this was not one of them.
I think, you know, I also think it's interesting to think about the specter of, like, just people knowing your dirty business, you know, and the internal fear that drives into you. Like, I don't know. Like, I found it to be affecting, and you know, it was certainly just a, oh man, this is just dark kind of vibe about the show.
Derek, that's what I lost when he turned out to be a pedophile. Because on one hand, there are the things in my life that I would not want shared, that I would go to some length at least to avoid being publicized. But this to me is like the thing where it's like, oh, well, he just got drunk that one time and said that racist thing. It's like, well, okay, but I don't have to worry about saying racist things when I get drunk because I don't really think about racist stuff all the time. That's like waiting to pop out of my head.
But
so, like, I get it. It sucks to have your personal business potentially exposed, but I can't envision a scenario where I'd fight to the death over it because I never looked at naked pictures of little boys and I never raped a child.
Right,
so,
right,
like,
right, right.
There's nothing I'd be that worried about.
I mean, look, we're going to get into, but to me, that's what I'm saying is, like, there are also, like, some degrees, and I hate this conversation because it, like, I'm not. It's all horrible, and I think even if you didn't actually hurt someone, you're supporting material that did actually hurt someone, and that's gross and disgusting, and I completely condemn it. But I do think that I do think you can say this is a boy who is confused and ashamed and did not actually rape anyone. I do think that sort of matters when you're talking about, should we make this person fight to the death? They have just had horrible thoughts and taken some disgusting action, but they haven't actually actively hurt anyone. And that does to me count. So,
well, yes. And if this was a news story, I would argue that individual, rather than being forced to fight to the death, should have been forced to face justice in a court of law and been held responsible as the law dictates. But
let's punish the F out of these people. You know what I mean? But maybe not. Do we have to do it? And do we have to make them gladiators? Like, I, you know.
Right. No, again, like, the idea of forcing people to be gladiators is very troubling if it was at all real. But this is where, like, to me, if a show is trying to, like, make a point by being extreme, and I feel like it's only like 1 degree further than how I feel it should actually go in real life, it just is not going to have that big an impact.
Hmm. I mean, also, wasn't...
I don't know if it's 1 degree or 3 degrees further, but my point is just like when I have this result where like, okay, well, these horrible people were kind of forced into this horrible thing. Like I don't feel that strongly.
But you didn't feel that about White Bear, even though that was also a child who was murdered.
Yeah, I mean, it was constructed very differently. And again, what interested in first of all, I just thought it was a better episode in terms of the content,
yeah,
just entertainment wise. But also, what is interesting to think about afterward is what the complicated scenario that's been created and the sort of future prison world they've conceived of. That's what's interesting to me, not the question of like, you know. There is some question of whether she deserved it too, but that's also like never-ending torture in perpetuity, not like a bad thing happening and maybe you're dead. I don't know. It just – to me, there was a lot more to think about in the aftermath with White Bear than with this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I also think that the guy went all through that thing and then there's another form of – you know, he's still going to face all of the never-ending social torture and the legal torture.
Correct.
That's – you know what I mean? So, but
all
whatever.
Those dudes, basically.
We got deep in the weeds on that. I'll say this, that if you are like Holskin a little down on this episode, do not be down on the series because, oh boy, the next one. And that'll be your homework for
it's
this
so
week.
So good. Yeah, it's so good, and it. I don't want to spoil anything, but you got San Junipero is. It's a totally unique episode of Black Mirror, as far as I can tell, and I loved it.
I would say if you've heard anyone talking about a particular episode of this season, it's almost certainly this one, and for good reason. And, yeah, this is be a fun homework assignment for you this week.
Yes.
Yeah. and on that note, since we're over time, I know you got to get going.
Yes.
Maybe we should say our goodbyes. Sorry for being a bit of a downer this week. That's just real. It's just where I'm at, and I can't promise you that I'll be fully back to normal next week. But hopefully,
no. But I think we can promise to be slightly less
dramatic about
in
it.
A state with each week that goes by.
I would agree, and I really hope that, you know, part of the reason we do this show is that hopefully some of this stuff. Does help with the healing,
yeah.
You know, now
an escape, a distraction, a positive, force in the world, as little of a force as it may have.
Don't let it make you complacent, but, you know, welcome that as well. So, all right. That's all I got for this week.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think we're back, man.
All
we
right.
Did it.
Say bye.
Why?
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.